So we're going to head to Florida really quickly, but I promise we're going to bring it right back up to Connecticut. Florida's privately run Brightline Railroad was supposed to prove passenger rail could turn a profit. Instead, last year, it carried less than half its projected ridership and actually lost $127 million, plus another $114 million in interest. Now, with billions in debt and possibly bankruptcy ahead, Connecticut's rail advocates are asking, is privatization really the answer? In fact, it was what Jim Cameron asked in his latest article of Talking Transportation from Connecticut Mirror. And we have Jim back on the show to talk more about it now. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I am doing great. What exactly is Brightline, though? I have to be honest, while I am a frequent visitor to Florida, it's usually to see my brother and Mickey Mouse. So I actually have no idea what Brightline is.
Well, Brightline is a brand new passenger railroad. Actually, it started in 2018 running from Miami up to West Palm Beach, and then they ran a line over to Orlando up to the airport. And it is fantastic. I mean, they have bright, shiny new cars, beautiful stations, wonderful amenities on board the trains. It's two and two seating. They have food service on the trains, free Wi-Fi, things you're not going to get on Metro North. And they even offered a first-mile, last-mile solution to get people to and from local train stations. So it is a fantastic railroad. And the reason I wrote about it is I'm often asked by Metro North riders, why can't they privatize this railroad? If they were running a private, for-profit railroad, they would treat the customers better, which is, you know, a nice theory, but you know, as I said in my article, what do the finance bros say? Will it pencil? Will the numbers add up? And all we have to do is to look at Brightline and see, nah, it's not working out as well as we had hoped. As you said, they only got about half of the ridership they were expecting last year. They thought they'd have over 6 million riders. They got less than half that amount. And they lost $127 million. Not counting all the debt that they have to carry on the construction costs that they've spent, which is like something $5 billion with a B, $5 billion worth of debt that's going out 20 years.
Oh, wow. But why, Jim? So everything you just described sound kind of dreamy to the point that I would almost find a reason to ride the train more times than I do right now. Why would it be failing so badly? Is it just because it's so expensive, you know, out of the gate? And it, like, will it? I guess, even out over time? Or, I mean, that's a lot of debt it's taking on.
Well, it's very expensive to, you know, build new stations. The line that they built from West Palm to Orlando is their own dedicated high-speed track. It's, you know, beautifully built, but really expensive to, you know, build and operate trains. So will it survive? I don't know. I think they're going to have to default on some of their debt payments starting this fall. They've already asked the banks to extend their credit line a little bit further. You know, there are many parallels between what happens along I-95 in Florida and what happens up here. I-95 is the main north-south corridor in some parts of Miami. That highway is six lanes wide in each direction. But a lot of people, I think, are just more comfortable, you know, driving in their cars, even though it's bumper-to-bumper traffic, just like today on I-95, talking to all your listeners out there, crawling their way down to work. But the question is, why couldn't they get more passengers on those trains? Why couldn't they do something that's going to increase the ridership? The fares are very reasonable. I mean, they're very much like Metro North. They have a 94% on-time performance record. I mean, it's a beautiful railroad, and if they weren't carrying $5.5 billion in debt, they might be able to make it through and just build ridership. But, you know, people want their money back after they've loaned it to them.
But is it, do you think, Jim Cameron, is it a matter of, again, you know, you pay up front and you'll see it all kind of come out in the wash later? Or was it the wrong sort of location? Like, if you were to have done a Brightline in southwestern Connecticut, you know, from Fairfield to Grand Central Terminal, I mean, would you have seen the money come back? Because to me, I think that is one of the biggest issues for people on Metro North. And you certainly understand this a lot better with what you do. But I think when you hear people on Metro North who are upset with it, it is because of the spotty Wi-Fi for many years, or it is because of the conditions, or it is because it's not on time. I mean, it's all the things that you're saying Brightline does well. So is it that they picked the wrong location to launch something like that? I mean, obviously, I know it comes down to the God Almighty buck. But if we had had that money, instead of reinvesting it into fixing up right now our tracks for Metro North, if we instead put it into something like a Brightline in the Fairfield County corridor, would that have seen more success than where it was placed in Florida?
Well, I think it was an ideal location because the traffic problems in South Florida between Miami and West Palm, even if you've never taken the train, you're down there, you know what, you know how bad the traffic can get.
Mm.
So I think it was the right location. Part of it was the structure of the railroad itself. I mean, it uses an existing freight railroad track line with a lot of grade crossings. There's 156 grade crossings, you know, where gates come down, 156 of them between Miami and West Palm. And there are a lot of people that have to, you know, get across the railroad track, and they're impatient, and they drive around the gates, and they've had 180 deaths on that railroad. That hasn't deterred ridership. What they needed to do is to, you know, put more gates in or educate people about you can't cross the railroad tracks. These trains are running 80 miles an hour, so don't get in the way, pal. No, right location. Perfect service. I don't think there's much that they're offering that I wouldn't love in a railroad anywhere in the world. They're offering the location, but they were over-optimistic. I mean, they thought they'd have 6.5 million riders by last year, their seventh year of operation, 6.5 million. They didn't even get half that amount, and they lost so much money that even the fares aren't covering the operating costs, let alone paying for the debt. So, you know, it comes down to, as the finance guys say, it doesn't really pencil. I mean, they were just too optimistic in their projections, and they couldn't deliver on that.
We are chatting with Jim Cameron of Talking Transportation. We'll have his full article link on our website, voiceofct.com, later on today. But we're talking about a comparison of Florida's privately run Brightline Railroad and what we've got up here, which is Metro North. So you started to highlight them before, Jim, but I wanted to reiterate for our listeners, what would you say are some parallels between Brightline and Metro North?
Well, one of the things that Brightline did that was really smart was they owned the real estate around the train stations. And they thought, you know, if we could develop some offices, some housing, maybe some businesses around the train stations on real estate that we own, we could make some money from those rents, and the rents would help subsidize the operation of the trains that are bringing people to and from those destinations. That's a very smart idea. It works very successfully in other parts of the world. And it's sort of something that Metro North is talking about, because the Department of Transportation owns all of the stations in Connecticut, with a couple of exceptions. They own the parking lots at the train stations as well, too. So what if the DOT decided to maybe on some of the parking lots put up housing, put up stores, retail locations, et cetera? What if they got into the development business on the land that they own here in Connecticut and used money from that to help subsidize the operations? Now, that's something they're kind of hinting at doing, but they haven't pulled the trigger on yet, because they have to work with, you know, all the towns along the line that administer the train stations and the parking as well, too. But I think that's one of the lessons that was learned in other, you know, commuter railroads and subway systems around the world. And it's something that Brightline was trying to pick up on. Now, again, because they have so much debt at this point, they may lose some of that real estate or lose control of it. But the idea of developing around the train stations, so people may not need to have two cars per family or three cars per family, you know, I think it's a very smart idea. And it's something that Brightline will, you know, I think continue to try and develop.
I mean, in your perfect world, Jim, which maybe this is a silly question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. In your perfect world,
yeah.
Right? Are there things about Brightline that we'd be able to bring to Metro North without privatizing, or would we need to privatize to have some of the perks of Brightline?
Oh, no, absolutely. How about new cars? How about better seating on the trains instead of 3 and 2 seats so everybody's crammed in there like, you know, passengers on a low-discount airline or something? How about more amenities at the train stations? I mean, since COVID, many of the train stations that used to have like a newsstand and a coffee stand for commuters that were waiting in the morning to catch the train, they never really reopened. So there's not many amenities at the train stations as well, too. I think they could do a lot of things. Metro North could do a lot of things to improve the quality of service. Get the trains running faster. I think that's one of the most common complaints that I hear from commuters every day. The trains are running slow. They're delayed. You know, and it's, you know, it comes back to the tracks that we have. Brightline has brand new purpose-built tracks and signal systems. We inherited a railroad that's 100 years old in some places and just requires constant whack-a-mole kind of repairs along the tracks that, you know, that we've got today. So we're blessed with a tremendous infrastructure. That's the good news. The bad news, it's really old, and it costs a lot of money just to maintain it.
And I think the other thing, Jim, that I again, people should definitely read your article because I think it's really fascinating to compare the two. What would you say is a lesson in all this for Connecticut commuters?
Well, I think the lesson in all this is circling back to the original question that I asked, because this is what I get asked by commuters a lot. Why can't we privatize this railroad, Metro North? Why can't we make the operators, the railroad, realize that they should be doing things to attract riders, you know, instead of just saying, yeah, we got a monopoly. You want to go into New York City, you got to take the train. You're going to pay the fares that we want. I think they should be doing more things to try to make the railroad attractive, serve the clientele, and give people a reason to get out of their cars and try taking the train. You know, winter's coming up. Winter is no time to be driving around, whatever the conditions might be on the highway. The train makes a lot more sense. So if you've never tried taking the train, even within Connecticut, to go from, you know, Fairfield to Stamford or do something like, you know, go off and, you know, have dinner in South Norwalk and then catch a train home, give it a try. I mean, it's very convenient. There's parking at the train stations. And I think if more people felt that there was a customer service mentality on Metro North, as opposed to a monopoly, we're going to run the trains the way we want, take it or leave it, I think it would go a long way to, you know, learn from the lessons of Brightline in Florida.
Have you been on Brightline, Jim?
Only in my dreams. I wish I have taken that train. I have not had the pleasure of being down there yet to try taking it, but I've been following it very closely.
I feel like you've earned a round trip on Brightline. I feel like you, if anybody in the state of Connecticut, right? I feel like you should do a field trip. You should do a field trip.
I think I can do that.
Right? I feel like you need to. Yeah. I feel like you've
earned it. I'll talk to my editor at the Mirror and see if they could set me up with a trip to Florida.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, absolutely. And listen, if you need a plus one, yeah, as a write-off, if you need a plus one, let me know, because I am fascinated by this. After reading your article and just looking at the pictures alone, I'm very into train travel. I'm actually very, very into it. I wish it was still like as nostalgic for people as it used to be. But I love the idea of train travel, and I think Metro North has so much to offer, especially in these very congested times that we're living in with, you know, road traffic and everything. But I would love to kind of feel that experience and see what the huge, you know, difference really is. And even if it is some of the things that you just outlined before, Jim, that we could fix without even privatizing, like building up the opportunities at the train station. I find the same thing you're saying, like why we don't have more of an emphasis on the experience of being at the train station, whether that's cafes or, and I know they're trying to digitize them more and everything, like I know they're working on it, but I'd be fascinated to see what the huge difference really is with Brightline versus Metro North.
Well, I think next time you're down there visiting your brother in Orlando, you should take a little joyride.
There you
just go.
Go,
you know, try taking a look at it. I think you'd be really gobsmacked, as most people. If any of your listeners have been to Florida and they've seen Brightline, maybe not ridden it, you know, they kind of, you know, go ooh and ah and wow, look at that beautiful train. how come they have those beautiful new trains
and
our
don't.
Trains are like clunking along being pulled by diesel locomotives? Come on.
Yeah, right. We start to sound like Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I want it now. Yeah. I do. I want to experience it. So whether you go down there and you experience it, or you're right, next time I go to visit my brother, I'll just have to make it a point to do a round trip. I'm very intrigued by this Brightline Railroad. Hopefully it doesn't go away before we get to experience it. Jim Cameron, I want to thank you for what you do. Talking Transportation, and his latest article is linked and up on our website, voiceofct.com, if you want to read it for yourselves. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Melissa.
All right. Talk to you soon.